45 metres back. Bernard Foley.
It's got the legs.
It's got the legs. The distance.
Hello and welcome to Pick and Drive Rugby. We are the People's Podcast, providing a platform for rugby lovers to come together and support the game that's played in heaven. I'm your host, Mitch. Joined with me this week is Lockie. Lockie, not a great week from a Queensland perspective, Super Rugby Women's or Super Rugby Men's. What happened?
Thanks very much, Mitch. Hello, everyone. I've had better weeks as a supporter. There's a few very large fist-sized dents in the couch cushions from a couple of tantrums on Friday across both games. But look, frustrating is all hell. We'll get into it when we wrap up the Super Rugby Women's with M Chancellor, as you'll hear in a tick.
Yeah.
And also Super Rugby Pacific. That Reds Moana game was a tough watch. But a couple of wins for the Tars. It's a good week to be a Tars fan.
That's right. It definitely is a good week. The second win of the year, but we'll get into that in a little bit later. So as Lockie alluded to just before, we do have M Chancellor joining us very shortly to wrap up Super Rugby Women's, the regular season. Look at the semi-finals coming up this weekend and ahead to the final. How Queensland got that final still is beyond me, but we'll talk about that coming up. We will then get into our Super Rugby Pacific wrap-up for round 8, I think it was. And then we'll do a quick preview of round 9 that's coming up this coming weekend. So before we get into the rugby action, we do have our tipping comp that is ticking away. Well done to Wilson or Wilson's Warriors or Nick W on first place. Still, he's been there for the last few weeks, still has that first place locked away. 37 points for him. Owen C or Owen Carroll in second place on 35 points, following very closely by Pearson C or Big Boys in third place on 34 points. Now, I've cracked the top 60. I'm 154th, which I'm very, very happy about. As long as I can finish in the top 200 by the end of the season, I think I'll be happy. Lockie, you were in the top 20. I had a quick scroll through before we started. I was down to 40-something, and I still couldn't see you in there. So what's happened?
I got to be honest. I haven't put my tips in for 2 weeks. The bye week always throws me up. And I don't think any away teams have been winning. So I'm in for a rude shock when I finally check. If I'm still in the top 100, I'll be lucky. But heaps of rugby to chew through. Mitch, you ready to go?
Let's get into it. Let's go. All right, it's time to talk Super Rugby Women's now, and we are so excited to welcome back to the podcast the hardest working woman in Australian rugby, Emily Chancellor. Em, you're an international Wallaroo, you're representing the New South Wales Waratahs, you've got your own podcast, you're also a commentator on Stan Sport. How do you fit everything in? It's just, is there anything you can't do?
Thank you. That is very kind. No, I wouldn't say I'm doing everything at the moment. I feel like I have time at the moment, but I'm enjoying filling the time with something. I feel like they always say, give a job to a busy person. And like you find you're most efficient when you're actually busy. So I like being productive and I like filling my days with lots of things. So I'm enjoying that.
So good. We've seen so far, obviously you had an unfortunate injury at the start of the season. Can you update us on your ACL and how you're progressing through rehab?
Yeah, so I tore my ACL round 1, super unlucky. Before contact, I felt it go. It was the classic. They say you feel it, it hurts a lot, and then it doesn't hurt at all. And that's exactly what happened. I was on the field and I was like, yeah, I felt that. And damn, it hurts, and now it doesn't. Now walk off the field. So that sucked, but it's part of sport. It's part of life. It's such a common injury these days, and there's nothing really that I could have done to stop it. So emotionally, you kind of have to just accept it and move on. I'm not someone that likes to sit and feel sorry for myself. So I was very proactive with searching for a surgeon, getting a scan, all of that jazz. And I was lucky enough with minimal swelling in my knee early on to be able to get my operation 6 days after doing it. So I had my surgery. I'm now 3 weeks post-op. There are good days, there's bad days, but overall, I'm really enjoying the challenge at the moment of trying something different, spending a lot of time in the gym doing upper body. And I'm so lucky that I have a training buddy because, unfortunately, Adiana Talakai, our Wallaroos hooker, and Waratahs hooker also has done her ACL just a few weeks before me. So we're on this journey together, which is incredibly lucky because having a training buddy when you're in the gym for 3 hours alone would be horrible. It's bad enough in a duo, so I can't imagine what it would be like by myself. So I'm really grateful that I've got a friend to join me on that journey at the moment.
Who's pushing more 10 at the moment? Addie's pretty tough.
Addie is definitely the gym queen. We've made a little pact with each other that she is going to get me to lift big in the gym. So I'm pushing to get a solid PB in my bench press on the condition that I'm allowed to push her when we get onto the running and into the field stuff. And I'm going to push her to get a solid PB when we do a Bronco. So we've got a good like accountability system, and she's loving telling me what to do in the gym at the moment. So I can't wait till we get on the field and we can run.
A bit of payback. That's so good. So, and we're going to jump into a bit about Super Rugby Women's impressions, I guess, from the season that has been so far, the regular season. Now that you've had a bit of time on the sidelines, albeit under injury, you are probably in the same mind frame of me and Mitch, and that this has been easily the most competitive season to date. Can you identify a couple of the standouts from this season just as a whole and the quality of the comp?
Standout players or teams?
I'd say not so much players or teams, but what's been different this season as a spectator? You've been doing some commentary and you've been watching the sidelines. Has anything stood out that's changed or improved in the competition this year?
I think overall the handling errors have got a lot less. So the ball skill has been really great. I think set piece is the other thing that's really impressed me across the board. You know, there's been a few seasons in the past where, and, you know, I'm going to be biased because I'm a forward, so that's what I look at. But, you know, like the line outs, there's been seasons where we're lucky to get a pot up at the front, you know, to just get the ball in. Whereas I think this season I've been really impressed by the whole competition's ability to, you know, move around and get some good movement in line out. And then again, the maul has been quite a strength for a lot of teams, which is really nice to see. And of course, you know, your speedsters are still doing speedster things, and there are more of them. I think that so the quality of the player across the board is really nice to see.
And Mitch, how about you, mate? You've been one of the keenest observers so far. What stood out to you?
Yeah, I think this season just I guess the lack of blowouts that we've had. We've had one or two. I mean, the Waratahs girls are in such fine form that no one's really coming close to them at the moment. But everyone else throughout the competition have been pretty close. There's been a few upsets thrown in there. Everyone's got a win this year, which is fantastic to see. There's been a few ducks go through the season in previous years. So just the way that I think all the teams are kind of pushing for full 80 minutes now, like Em was sort of saying, fitness is up there, set piece is getting so much more competitive. Just the way that every time you tune in to Super W or Super Rugby Women's on the weekends now, you can know you're going to expect a really exciting game.
100%. And there were so many exciting games. All three, as a matter of fact, in round five were exceptional. We're going to do a quick review of those now, starting with the Tars 31 getting up over my Reds 19. Hard to see. But, Em, your team was phenomenal, especially early doors. What stood out to you from this one?
Yeah, the Tars did have a solid first half. I actually want to give massive credit to the Reds in this game because I think they played their best game of the season in this final game for them. The score doesn't quite reflect the pain that they were to the Waratahs. I think they did a really good job. Vani Awong did a really great job of shutting down Maya Stewart. with her chop tackles. Like every time Maya went to run, Vani was there, and there was no, you know, ability to fend or step her. She just got under her arm and chopped. And I thought that was a really impressive, obviously part of their game plan, but an individual standout. I think the Tars are just showing their strength in set piece, their ability to play fast rugby, but also to outlast a team. Like it's not just structured rugby that they play well in, it's also the broken play. Having young Caitlin Hulse, you know, rip a ball out of the arms of a Reds player and run 60 metres and score a try is, like, it's beautiful to see, because to have the confidence to do something like that on the edge of a field is, you know, it's gutsy.
Yeah, Mitch, that was a massive moment in the game, 7 minutes in, to go up 14-0. And I guess I know the Reds pushed back really hard in that second half, but the Tars looked fairly comfortable through this.
Yeah, they did. And it's we've seen that throughout Super W this year, that the Waratahs just are a bit of a step ahead. Like, they've got some really class players, particularly out wide, that they've been able to score a lot of points and put pressure on opposition really early in the game, where the other teams have found themselves trailing. And we saw that again this week. As Em was saying, credit to the Reds. They did really well to come back and to put a lot of pressure late on the Waratahs. But, I mean, I'm just so impressed by the back three, by the Waratahs, all three of them. I mean, they've got to be named in the Wallaroos in a few weeks. They've just been standouts for across the Super W competition this year.
100%. Can I ask quickly, Em, the back three gets a lot of plaudits. I'm a bit biased as a forward as well. We're all keen on the Piggies, but the centre pairing, G-Fred gets a lot of love, but I thought Cheech Barker had an awesome game as well. What's improved from there this season?
Cheech is one of the most solid performers that we have, and she's been consistent. She's like that pairing, that 12-13 pairing has been probably the most consistent across, you know, the last three or four seasons of Super Rugby Women's for the Waratahs. Like, they're both always there. Cheech just plays a really underrated game style. She actually did get voted out MVP internally at the Waratahs this week. So the team felt the same way as you did, which is nice to know you're on the right track. But, you know, Cheech has always got that good footwork. She's really good at the line. She finds space. She's just a solid performer. So, you know, I don't think it's a surprise from an internal perspective that she performed, but it's nice to see her. You know, she made a couple of nice little breaks, a nice big bridge ball to get a try out wide. And just, like, she's just solid. She made a good tackle to allow May to get a turnover in a big overlap at one stage. So, you know, she's just a solid player, and we all love Cheech.
Yeah, just for those listening at home, between Cheech and G-Fred, 26 tackles, a try, 4 line break assists and 3 turnovers. Defensively, they were just massive, but also setting up stacks for the Flyers at wide. Desi Miller, Maya Stewart, they were really key to that link play. So a massive performance from the Tars. They go unbeaten in the regular season again. Mitch, have you got any final words on the Reds-Tars matchup before we move over to Brumbies and Force?
There was one thing that Em said on the Stan Sport coverage in the week, around leading into the Reds week, and that was on the Waratahs sort of special, that you'd rather be dead than red. And I just wanted to focus on that again, because I think for this podcast we particularly focus on that being Waratah centric. But it just for the girls and the team in a wider context, is that I guess the mindset coming into this game that they really wanted to make a statement performance leading into the finals?
Oh, it's so easy for me to say things when I'm not actually in the 23 and I'm not going to come up against the rap. it was a loose comment, and I, you know, we joke about it. It's definitely something that we'd say, you know, at training, and it's part of the attitude that you have to take in. I think either way, like that Reds-Tars game, whether they're top or bottom of the table, it's an emotional clash. It's also a solid number of Wallaroos are in that red squad. So they're still a class act. They just have had some real trouble finishing the job this season. But, yeah, it's a mindset. I'd rather be dead than red. I'd say it to their faces too, I think. but it definitely is part of the, like, you know, the pride. Like, we have a good rivalry, and you know, we joke about it with Annabelle Cody, you know, coming from the Reds. We joked about it when Laurie Kramer was hanging around the Tars outfit as well. It's something that we definitely believe in, but obviously when push comes to shove, we're all still really great mates as well and respect each other off the field.
Awesome rivalry, just as it is across women's and men's, and keen to see it renewed next year. But we're going to jump across to the Force and Brumbies now. Chance, you are on deck to call this one. Force getting up 38 points to 36. Seven tries scored by the Hookers. We talked off air about the rolling maul and then earlier this season. That dominated this game.
Yeah, it was beautiful. It was actually, like, to me, a game of four quarters. You had the Western Force come out firing in that first 20 minutes, 14 unanswered points, I think it was. And then you flip it, and the next 20 minutes, you have the Brumbies come through with 14 unanswered points. And the end at halftime being a locked up score, I'm pretty sure. I'm saying that with confidence, I'm pretty sure I'm right. Yeah. And then, you know, the Brumbies continue to push hard for the next 20, and suddenly the Force are just like, Force come out again, next 20 minutes, put good points on, and suddenly the Brumbies are on the chase again. And, you know, to their credit, they caught up, but just not enough to hold on. And the Force have been a real standout for me this season in terms of their improvement across the series, but that was a great game from them.
Mitch, we talked about this one last week about the Force being really impressive through the season, as Chance mentioned, and being the dark horses to get up over the horses themselves in Canberra. Did this play out the way you thought it would?
We spoke in our preview last week around how we thought that both the Western Force and the Brumbies are kind of set-piece focused games or teams in the competition this year, and set-piece delivered, right? So many rolling maul tries, so many points scored from in tight. It was the game, I think, that we, as forwards, we're all forwards here, love to watch, right? It had test match intensity, both teams coming in, whacking each other, just at the leads changing hands multiple times, really exciting. And games that go right down to the wire with a few points in it, they're the best games to watch. And this one, you really didn't know who was going to finish the 80 minutes on top because it was such a topsy-turvy sort of game.
And so much drama late in the piece, and we thought the Force had it in the bag before Ash Bishop got a runaway intercept. That must have been an amazing atmosphere, those final five.
Yeah, it definitely was. And I think, like, it was warranted. The Brumbies had done a really great job in that game, and to come away, you know, not looking on the scoreboard like it was a genuine battle would have been a bit disappointing for them. And to be able to come so close, you know, that's a conversion away, and obviously we can't blame a kicker for a loss, but to show how close that arm wrestle was is a nice reflection on the game, and it does add a little bit of spark. I think Ash Bishop's had some clutch moments on that field, I believe, in club rugby as well. So there was definitely a few comments I saw after the game about, like, oh, do you remember that? Was that better than when you kicked the penalty to win the game last time? You know, like that kind of stuff. So it's definitely something she's familiar with doing on that field, and she did a really good job.
She wasn't the only Brumby stepping up, Mitch. We saw a couple of their Wallaroo standouts. Pessie Parley carried for over 100 metres. She had a huge shift. Tanya Nader just bagged a cheeky hat-trick. And then on the Force side, Mac Leonard, again, we see a leading by example at set piece. Were there any other standouts on the field that you noticed from this game, Mitch?
I was really impressed with Mac Leonard, and that's who I was going to shout out as well. The way that she controlled the rolling maul for the Western Force, like, you can see from the coverage, just you can hear her voice screaming, like, and now, like, just directing the pressure that team is pushing through. And if it wasn't for her, they wouldn't be as dynamic as a pack as they are. So really impressed with the performance that she puts in, week out, and really excited to see what she can do in a gold jersey in a few weeks as well.
Massive. You've got to shout out the Force Hookers too. Canadian Sarah Klein bagged a double. Hera Barb Malcolm Hecker got a double as well. And their Tongan international, Mitch. I see a TT Marque has come across under the Pacific Oz program. I think she plays inside centre for the Tonga national team. And she carved up the Brumbies. She was superstar through 12 on that day. So plenty of people to keep an eye on. Have we got any final talking points on this one before we move to Rebels and Drua?
I'm happy to move on.
I want to just give a little shout out to Tiki Joyce at 14. I thought she had a cracker game, but also to note that she's a back rower and not a winger and has found herself in the wing spot because they've had a couple of season-ending injuries, but also she's rapid. She's clocked the fastest, meters per second in their team. And I think she filled the role really well. There were a few little moments where I was like, oh, there's a little inexperience in a winger's position. But overall, she was solid out there. So I thought that was an awesome addition and a versatility to a player.
Yeah, that runaway try was so good. And great feat from, who was playing blindside? Was it Lucy?
It was Lucy Dinner, yeah.
It was Lucy Dinner. That was a great pickup as well. Fords all day. We do all the work. We should get all these plaudits. Team, we'll jump across to Rebels Fiji, which in an unbiased opinion, I thought was probably the best game of the tournament. Best till last. A team that hasn't won since 2020, getting up over the defending premiers, Mitch. Did you see this one coming? This was a hell of a game.
No, we didn't. In our preview last week, we did not see anyone stopping the Fijian Indroa this year. They've been, well, other than the Waratahs, but they've been such a just a nuisance to kind of contain. And as good as the Melbourne Rebels women have been, we just weren't sure if they could front up physically. And gosh, how wrong were we? What a performance by the girls from Melbourne. Absolutely incredible.
A couple of familiar faces there putting hands up. Wallaroo's teammate Ash Masters finishes up with a double. She's been a wrecking ball all year, but they've had a couple of young players really stand up in that team as well. Have you noticed any of the Rebels players, or are there any Rebels players who've caught your eye this year who you might not have seen in previous iterations of Super Rugby Women's?
Yeah, I thought, is it Cassie, the 10?
Cassie Siatanga, yeah.
Yeah, I thought she had a cracker of a game on Saturday. She really stepped up. She had a really good kicking game and she really kept them putting field position pressure on the drawer. I mean, the reality is the Rebels this year have had a really solid team. Like, they haven't been an easy team to beat. I think they've lacked finishes in that execution side. Like, they have been successful in their set piece with Nuku scoring a lot of tries for them, the most tries ever for a Rebels player. We've got solid performers in Mel Kawa. Their forward pack actually caused a bit of damage to people. It wasn't easy scrummaging against them. And then you have some solid ability. They just didn't have finishes in my eyes. And that showed in the way they performed, that they were just, they've been chipping away at finding a win and they found it at the end. And I think it's a beautiful way for them to finish their season.
It was so good to see, Mitch. The Drua just ahead 14-13 at halftime, and Ash Masters gets over, Joanna Salto gets over, and they're up 27-14. I had my heart in my mouth when I saw that intercept try. Were you expecting that to slip away at the end like I was?
Yeah, I mean, what composure by the Rebels to fight back and get the lead and to win this game. We've already spoken about her already, but I just thought Ash Masters was incredible. Last season, she's playing in the forwards. This year, she's playing in the backs. She's captaining the team. She's taking quick taps and scoring under the post. And, like, is there anything that she's not doing well at the moment? She's just going from strength to strength, really looking forward to seeing what she can do later on in the year as well for the Wallaroos.
Where would you play her in? Would you play her in the forwards or the backs for Wallaroos?
She's a forward. In my mind, she's a forward.
Yes.
We need some razzle-dazzle in there, and she adds that. And to be able to play with a forward in those looser channels that has the ability to play like a back, I mean, to me, it's almost a no-brainer to have her there versus in the backs where we've got solid defenders, solid carriers. You know, it just feels like, from a Wallaroos perspective, I don't want to say the seven jersey's calling her name, but it's the seven jersey's calling her name.
only temporary. Yeah. A quick word on the Drua. Disappointing performance as they head into the semi-finals. Obviously, they've already wrapped up second place and we're always going to host one. but plenty for them to work on. I thought their fullback, Adelaide Boona, who picked up a couple of tries, she has serious gas. I think she ran for over 220 metres in that game as well, a couple of long-range tries. Louisa Tosolo continues to be pretty impressive off the boot, but Mitch, they've got a lot to work on if they're going to, you know, secure a win over the Force and go for three in a row.
Yeah, I think discipline's one of the areas that's crept in the last few weeks that they're giving away too many penalties and they're getting on the wrong side of the referees' calls. We saw that last week particularly, that the referees were just getting really fed up with the consistently offside and the way that they weren't sort of adapting to the calls that were being made. That they were a little bit better this week in that regard, but they were still giving away more penalties than they needed to at this level. If they can get that under control, they're going to be a real handle leading into the finals. But at the moment, they're just letting the opposition back into the game by giving away penalties and giving away easy meters.
Yep, huge concern, especially for the knockout games, which we're just about to cover now. So quickly heading into our preview of the semi-finals, we've seen the Rebels and the Reds knocked out. The Reds have gone from grand finals to spoons. And like, I guess I don't want to address it because I'm a Queenslander, but we've got to touch on that. first with you, Chance, did you expect to see the Reds drop all the way from grand finals to the bottom this year? It's been a pretty significant drip from there.
Yeah, no, I don't think that anyone was expecting it. You heard some, they've had a lot of like frustration in terms of, I think they've had two coaches in this short period. They have a different forwards coach. There's now a new director of high performance women's. Like there's things that are just changing in an organization, which makes it really hard to find like direction. So I don't want to blame because they definitely don't know what's going on the inside, but looking from the outside, I'd say it's hard to have direction and hard to have, a cohesive team, no matter what kind of players you've got, when you don't have a coach at the beginning of the season and everyone else started their preseason and the Reds were still just training because they didn't have a preseason to, you know, any structure to it. So it's unfortunate. No one wants to see it. No one wants to see anyone perform one year and fall the next, unless it's the Crusaders, but that's a different story.
So fair.
I think like ultimately the teams that have been genuinely investing in their women's program are now seeing the results. And hopefully it's a good message to all Super Rugby franchises that, you know, you invest and you get some good performance. So that's my kind words to leave it with.
And a good one to leave it on too. We're going to head straight into our semi-final previews now. So first cab off the rank, both of these games are going to be on Friday, April 19. So coming up very shortly, it all kicks off in Fiji for the minor semi-final, which is 2-3. That's the Fiji and Drua hosting the Western Force. Mitch, have you got an early tip for this one and how do you think it'll play out?
I really would love to see the Western Force go to Drua and just cause an upset. We saw last time that they were there that there was that torrential downpour going on and no team is able to play the style of rugby that they've done through the season in those conditions. So hopefully a dry track this week can lean more into the Western Force's preparation. Both teams have to travel, which is interesting. They're both coming from games in Australia. So in some ways you think that might benefit the Drua, but at the same time, they're having to travel back home as well. So I think in terms of that kind of element, both teams will come into this probably pretty fatigued just from the way that they have, how far they have to travel to make this. The Drua girls though, like they know what it is to play in Fiji. They know what it is to play in front of their crowd. So they're going to be hard to stop. As much as I would love to see the Western Force get up and beat them, I think it's going to be a big ask to do that.
Em, you know all too well how dangerous the Fijians are in knockout footy. What are you expecting from that matchup?
I mean, you know, Fiji know how to play finals footy. Like this is when they get good. This is when they get excited. I don't know who I think is going to win. I would also love to see the Force really challenge them. I think it's interesting the Force have decided to stay on the East Coast. So they're not flying back over to Perth. They're staying here, which can change the mindset. Like they're suddenly a high performance team. They're, you know, traveling as a professional group there's a different element that might come from that, whether it be, you know, fatigue and, you know, it's too much because they're not ready for it, or does it set them up in that position that's like makes them believe that they're the team to go ahead and beat the Drua? I can see it happening both ways, but I'll put my money on Fiji.
Oh, no, I've got to back the four seed team. I know it's with my heart, but I love how openly and how clearly they've invested their money into the women's program over there. We've seen multi-year contracts being developed. We've seen the academy, full-time coaching staff, and it's built really, really nicely. Obviously, great foundations laid, particularly at the TARS program through Wallaroos, but this has been, they've been in leaps and bounds over in Perth. So I would love to see them get up. And based on that set piece performance against the Brumbies in particular, we saw really good scrum play. We saw excellent rolling maul play. If it's a dry track, and that's a huge if, I reckon they'll be up for this one. So I'm gonna tip Force by three, cross my fingers and toes, and hope for an all Aussie final. But I know where both of you are going to sit on this one, unsurprisingly. We're going to start with you, Em. We've got TARS v Brumbies at Allianz Stadium, 5:45 p.m. on Friday, April the 19th. You must be fizzing for this one.
Yeah, super excited. It's finals footy and the TARS have been in good form. I don't feel like we have played the game that we want to play yet. And I think we're about to release it. Like, I think we're about to see that extra element come through. The TARS do not want a repeat of last year. So to me, and I'm sitting here in my Waratahs training singlet, I'm not going to pretend I'm not biased. I am 100% backing the Waratahs, and I'm almost not going to say anything else because I would be doing my team a disservice right now.
Mitch, I'm saying that they haven't played the game that they're wanting to yet sounds pretty ominous.
Yeah, I mean, I wouldn't want to be a Brumbies player this week. Let's put it that way. As good as buying into what Em's saying, as good as the Waratahs have been, they haven't put in a full 80 minutes yet. Like they've left points out on the field, and they would have known coming into this semi-final week how their season planned out last year, that they've tripped up in the finals and didn't end up making the grand final. They're not going to do that again. We said that last week leading into the Reds game. I said they're going to come out firing, they're going to come out fast, and they're going to blow this Reds team away, and they did that in the first 30 minutes. Yes, the Reds came back, but the Waratahs had the game pretty much sealed by that point. I would not be surprised to see 50 points put on the Brumbies this week by this Waratahs team. They are looking so good just across the board. Everyone is just firing.
50 points is terrifying. That's a terrifying prediction. I don't think it's going to be that big, but it'd be remiss of me to tip against the TARS at this stage. They have been undefeated minor premiers for a reason. And just the strength of set piece combined with particularly Mayer and Desi out on the wings, they've been so dominant one-on-one. We saw probably for the first time all season, the matchup between Varney and Mayer was the first time any of those wings have been equal. And still, the TARS back three has been killing it. Caitlin, obviously, that runaway try shows just how good she is, with probably another 15 years of a career to go. So, I think it's going to be TARS pretty comfortably. And that takes us, interestingly, to a final happening at Ballymore next weekend. Mitch, you got strong feelings about this one.
Boo. Why are we playing a final in Queensland when Queensland won one game in the season? Do they deserve to host it?
I'd like to think we do. It's a tough one. I know these things have worked out off screen. Em's, I'd be salty as well. It should really be in Sydney though, shouldn't it?
I mean, I understand, like, in theory why they've moved it to Queensland, like in terms of the history of finals, and you know, the Reds earned the right to potentially have a home game last year when they made the final. So I get it in the thought of, hey, here's the dominant team. We should put it in a position to support that. I'm going to only assume that there's been some kind of government funding that's been involved in the opportunity. I'm not opposed to a travel. I mean, we played the final against the Drua in Melbourne two years ago. So it's definitely in the premise of trying to, you know, share the love around. But you know, part of me would love it to be where the home team, you know, the team that qualified as first should get the opportunity to host a final. But in saying that, if it was Fiji that finished on top of the table and we had to travel to Fiji, would I be so keen? Maybe not. But, you know, I think you've got to respect the system at the moment where we're still growing, and to be able to share the love around the States, at least we're putting women's rugby in an exposure opportunity. We probably won't get the crowds supporting the teams that are playing as much, but there should be a good representation of women's rugby supporters, and that's important.
100%. Yeah. Now, I do understand, like, in from a logistical point of view, that Ballymore is considered now the home of women's rugby in Australia. That's where the Wallaroos will be based. But come on, win a game first. Like, that's all I want to say. Win a game before you host a final. One thing before we move off these games, and we've seen the last few weeks for the Waratahs, their captain Piper Duck hasn't been playing. In some of the photos on social media, she's been walking around in a moon boot. Is she expected back this week or by the final next week? Like, what's her injury status like at the moment?
Pipes is training this week, as far as I know. She's not in a moon boot. She's running. I don't know if I can say any more than that.
Yep. Cool.
And get out to Allianz. If you're around Sydney, get out to Allianz Stadium. It's all open for this game. This is the main event. This is the big one. So get down and support. It'll be a cracking game either way. If anyone's listening in Fiji, I'm assuming you're going to be there anyway. And super excited for a massive fortnight of Super Rugby Women's to finish up the season. Em, thank you so much for jumping aboard with us tonight. We know you're super busy, even though you're in rehab mode, and really appreciate your time. Good luck with the rest of your calls.
Thank you so much, guys. Really enjoyed the preview and the review.
Time to talk Super Rugby Pacific now. Super Rugby Pacific now. It is round 8 over the weekend, the second week of byes in a 12-team competition. Doesn't quite feel right, but it is what it is. We have had reduced games again. We've had 4 games over the weekend. The first game kicking off on Friday night was Moana Pacifica hosting the Queensland Reds. 17-14 was the final score on this one. To Moana getting their first victory against the Queensland Reds. Is that the first victory ever against the Queensland Reds, Lockie? 2 red cards as well. Bit of a brain snap by a few of the Reds' key players. Lockie, what happened?
Oh, I won't spend too long on this because otherwise we'll be here for another hour and a half to fully unpack the steaming pile that was that Thungarai game. Look, it's frustrating because there were parts of the second half where the Reds started to fire and then shot themselves in the foot. 17-14 is fair, and the Reds didn't deserve to win it. So well done, Moana, before I get too upset. But Reds did not switch on. They did not switch on this game. We thought coming off the bye, they've had a couple of losses heading into it. This is where you reset and you go again and you build back towards a couple of big home games coming up. But they didn't play. In the first 40, they conceded 9 turnovers. They barely fired a shot, and it almost took the red card for Tate McDermott for the team to actually start switching on. It was crazy. They scored a quick try after halftime. I think it was who was that? Penny Ravi got over the line, and then bang, McDermott sees yellow for that swinging arm tackle, and then he's off. So really, we just kept shooting ourselves in the foot. There was some, you know, desperate defense when we had 14 on the paddock, but desperate defense doesn't cut it at Super Rugby level. Moana Pacifica have great finishes out wide. They've got a huge pack, and a bit like the Force game a few weeks ago, this was clearly a banana peel game on the road, and the Reds once again have driven their cart straight over it.
And I think the key summation of this game for a Reds fan was that card to Tate McDermott. The Reds had gone on to score an awesome try to Josh Fluke, and it gets pulled back for the act of foul play. It gets reviewed. Tate goes off for a yellow. It gets upgraded to red. Now, that is the frustration from a Reds fan, that this team has shown earlier in the season how good they can play and how well they can score points. And in glimpses, they were able to do that this week, but not for the full 80. And it was simple, silly mistakes and bad, bad ill discipline that let Moana get back ahead and get the win ultimately. Two red cards, both to Tate McDermott and Fraser McWright, two players who I would be, if I was looking at the Queensland Reds team sheet coming into it, those are probably the first two players that I said I would be very surprised to see give away a red card penalty. Just brain fades, or what was your kind of read on both incidents?
Oh, first one looked like an absolute brain snap from Tate. You could see there was a bit of sort of high contact in the tackle that he was trying to make, and I think he took a bit of umbrage to that, which came in with a swinging arm, but it's unacceptable. They've got their judiciary on Monday night, so by Tuesday, if you're listening, there should be some idea of the duration of the ban, but they've been pretty heavy on head-high contact, so I'd expect to see both Fraser and Tate having a rest for a couple of weeks, which is a shame, but you know, that's the game. Don't hit people in the head, pure and simple.
I don't want to take away too much from... I was just going to say, if there's anything we've learned from the judiciary, maybe it is better that you lead with your head in contact instead of your arm, or you might even get only 2 weeks in that instance, let alone four or five.
Yeah, the judiciary lottery. We'll see what comes out of it. Moana, you know, they did what they had to. Willie Havili showed good composure to, you know, score that try at the end because they needed to score one to win it. The Pattaya try put the Reds up ahead and they led until the last minute. So, you know, Moana had to do it. Julian Savea still got it. Jeez, he's up to 62 Super Rugby tries. He absolutely flattened poor Harry McLaughlin Phillips. And I think we're going to see a bit of a reality check for the Reds over these next few weeks. They've got heaps and heaps of work, especially coming up against, they've got the Highlanders, Blues and Crusaders all coming up. So a big, big test for them. But I'm more interested in talking about the other Friday game. The other Friday Super Rugby Pacific game.
The one thing I wanted just to shout out for Moana, for the first time ever, they've got three wins in a season. So well done to them. Yeah. That's incredible. They're currently eighth on the competition. Three wins from eight games for a new franchise. That's awesome. But yeah, let's move on to the second game, which was, I mean, I'm calling it the best game of the year so far, but I'm a biased Tars fan. 43-40 to the Waratahs. Extra time, golden point. We've kicked a field goal to win the game. Will Harrison, I think I even said on the podcast, I need to boast on this one. I said on the podcast that Will Harrison is going to kick a penalty to win the game from 45 out like Bernard Foley did. Not only did he do it once, he did it twice. He kicked that penalty to take it to 40 points equal at full time. He then did it again to get the points for the victory, the drop goal. How good was that finish from the Waratahs?
Oh, it was clutch. And Will Harrison was clutch. We got to give him credit. The penalty from 40 out to make a golden point. The drop, he was pretty bog standard. Even though it was under pressure, he managed to absolutely crush it under advantage. I was more impressed with the sideline conversion from, who was it, Peach's try, quite late in the piece. And he absolutely nailed that from his non-preferred side, left footer kicking from the left. He split the sticks. So huge props. I know you called out his goal kicking the other week when we were talking about Tane Edmund as well. And Will Harrison has absolutely nailed the brief from that game. What a fantastic return for him after that huge injury layoff. Super, super stoked for him. But you were there in the crowd. You had a big bunch of mates with you. People new to rugby as well. Yep. Tell me a bit about the atmosphere at Allianz on Friday.
Oh, it was brilliant. I mean, apart from the fact that we set ourselves up in what appeared to be the Crusaders supporters bay, and we've got a group of about 15 Waratahs fans cheering. Some of them were internationals, didn't know the rules, cheered when I cheered, so they were cheering for everything. But it was a fantastic game to be at. What an opportunity to show our sport to international people who aren't familiar with it. They all left the stadium buzzing, talking about how much they love rugby, how excited they are for the World Cup in 2031. They didn't even know that they were hosting the World Cup in 2031 coming into it. They're now buzzing from it. So if anything, rugby won on the night, and that's the most important thing.
Well, 12 lead changes sums up how awesome this contest was. Truly seesawing, 43-40 to finish it up. We mentioned Will Harrison, but give us a couple of other standouts from the Tars, Mitch, because I've got a few, but I reckon there'll be some different ones.
Ned Hannigan, I think we've spoken about him in the past, but he was just, he's that calm, composed, physical impact player that we've currently been lacking at the moment. Like, we've got players like Lachie Swinton. Lachie Swinton as well has had a really good 2024 and has been performing really well for the Tars. But Hannigan just seems to know when the right time is to inject himself in the game, when it's the right time not to inject himself. And the carries that he's making and the meters that he's making out wide with ball in hand are really helping this Tars team to, I guess, stay competitive in games. And this week he had a massive shift.
I think you nailed that. Shed Hannigan was top of the pops for me as well. Julian Heaven, I thought, had a cracking game at hooker, pulled out a massive shift, scored a great try as well as nailing his set piece brief. And for me in the back line, Lafaketi, how much have you missed him early in the season? He was so solid. His break down the left touchline set up that Peach try with about 20 to play. He didn't miss a tackle. He's the glue. He really is the glue for that Tars back line.
I think this might be somewhat controversial considering what's happening, but Tristan Riley coming into the number 11 jersey or the 14 jersey in place of Mark Nwanganitawasi, incumbent Wallabies winger, he's had an incredible performance these last two times that he's played the Crusaders. He's been pivotal in getting the wins each time as well. Whether you think that Mark Nwanganitawasi deserves to be dropped or not, whether, I mean, there's talk going around on social media that he's off to the Roosters next year. Give other players time. Don't play him. I don't think that's necessarily what's happened this week, but you can't argue that Tristan Riley is having a massive impact on that back line and the way that he carries the ball and rides contact. It's just, it's really exciting to watch.
Another bloke coming out of the Sevens program too, and we'll mention that when we talk about the Rebels game in a tick, but that Sevens program is just so good for fostering all-round outside back talent.
It's incredible. I'm really looking forward to talking about Darby Lancaster later. I know that's who you're talking about. As good as the Tars were and getting the victory, incredible. The reality check is it's the second victory of the season. We're in round eight, so the season's still not a success at the moment. But if we can go through 2024 and only win two games and both of them are against the Crusaders, I said this to my wife walking out of the stadium, I'll be a somewhat happy Waratahs fan. Leading into the season, if anyone told me that we would beat the Crusaders twice in one season, home and away, I would have called you crazy. So
it's a dream. I don't think the Reds have beaten the Crusaders since 2011. So I'm hanging out. You guys, they're your bunny team. You're smashing them all the time now.
There was a stat that we've beaten the crew. Like, there was a stat on the TV coverage I saw when watching it back that Darren Coleman has the best win ratio against the Crusaders of any coach in Super Rugby at the moment. He's beaten them three times.
He'd be up there for all time, I reckon, against the Crusaders. He's doing a damn good job. You're the Tars, man. Do we have to pick anything else out of this game? Moments from this? There are a couple of things.
I guess the one controversy that we should probably talk about, and I think it typifies the Crusaders' season so far this year, is the kick on full time. Now, we've got 60 seconds to take a shot at goal. The clock's ticking over. You can't actually see this on the coverage because I did go back and watch it, but there's no clock on the screen on Stan Sport, but at the stadium there is a shot clock. So you could actually see the shot clock ticking over with the match clock, and Nick Berry points to it and says, we're on that. So there was a 1 second difference between the two. You could see it ticking down, and I can't remember the name of the, I think it was the fly half who took the shot. He kicked it with 1 second to go, which allowed the Waratahs to get the restart, which then got them down the other end and got the penalty, which tied things up. Why would you kick that ball? If you don't kick it, what happens? You're still ahead. You win the game.
It's match management, hey? I thought in a bit of a similar vein to the Reds Moana game, you know, it didn't matter, but that kick wound down. Willie Heverley took his time, his full 60, so they didn't have to restart, so we didn't give the Reds a chance to regain. I thought for all love and money that, who was it? Was it Rivers Reihana? I've probably mixed up who was playing 10. My apologies for Crusaders.
I think he was a replacement at that point, but yep.
Yeah, and just, yeah, what? Milk the clock. Milk the clock. It's what you've got to do to win games. It doesn't matter if it makes you look like a yeah, it was Ray Hunter. It doesn't matter if it makes you look like a shock and blow. You're winning. You've just won a game that you had to win to keep your season alive, and that gave the Tars a sniff. It was crazy to me that he didn't milk that, and then even crazier that Johnny McNichol sticks a hand out when you know that that's a yellow card. I mean, what possessed
all the lineout? The lineout leading into that, the worst lineout ever thrown.
Literally that was
went under the second rower. It's jumping it too. He went under his feet. Anyway, I think we've said enough about this game. We've got more to talk about. Let's move on. So the third game of the round was the Hurricanes hosting the Chiefs. Final score in this one was 36-23 to the Hurricanes. Now, the Chiefs had Damian McKenzie back this week, and they did look better with him, but no one is stopping the Hurricanes this season. They are 8-8 so far. Incredible.
All aboard the Cane Train, baby. They looked so good. I thought that the Chiefs were going to break them. They were up 23-17 with about 20 minutes to play before TJ Perenara got his 62nd Super Rugby try and Kenny Nahola went over. So they ended up blasting the Chiefs away in the last 20 minutes. Here's a couple of reasons why the Canes are the best, and then we'll move on to Aussie games that we care about. But Canes are offload kings. They are so good at getting that arm free. They're playing almost like the Drua of the Flying Fijians, the manner in which they're able to release support runners, particularly players like Ruben Love, TJ Perenara lurking around, and their back three of Peter Lackey, Brad Shields, and then Karifi Duplessis when he comes off the bench. Well, Duplessis Karifi is insane. So they're so good at that short passing game. And Asafa Amua, their hooker, is undoubtedly the form Super Rugby player right now. You can't find a bloke who I'd less like to tackle.
He's huge. Out wide as a hooker. Oh. It's crazy. Crazy.
He's an animal. He's such an animal. If he's not starting All Blacks hooker on form at the moment, I don't know what to tell you, Scott Robertson. But Asafa Amua is the real deal for me.
Incredible.
Yeah, any quick ones on this before we jump to the Rebels Highlanders?
I'm happy to move on to the Rebels because there's so much exciting to talk about there. But I do just need to correct myself. I said they were 8-8. They're 7-7. They have had a bye so far this season. So Hurricanes, not quite as good, but probably next week they will be 7-7 so far this year. Let's move across now to the last game of the weekend, which was down at Amy Park. Melbourne Rebels hosting the Highlanders, getting the job well and truly done, 47-31. Not only did they come away with a bonus point win, that puts them up into fourth place on the table at the official halfway mark of the season. I mean, am I dreaming? The Melbourne Rebels, who we're talking about not even existing post-2024, are in the top four of Super Rugby Pacific at round 8. How bloody good?
It's insane. Headlines you wouldn't even dream of. And so good for Victorian rugby fans. Get down. Like, we're starting to see the crowds grow a little bit at Amy Park for the Rebels, but This is some momentum. There's genuine momentum behind them, and it would be both a travesty and a huge failure if they don't qualify at least for a maiden final series, right? Like, they've put themselves in the box seat to succeed. A huge test coming up over the next 6 weeks. We'll touch on it at the end as to who they actually have to face, but you can only play what's in front of you, right? And they have won 3 on the bounce, including a game against a Highlanders team that can score from anywhere, and they ended up doing it pretty comfortably.
Darby Lancaster, hinted at him earlier.
Yeah.
3 tries this week. He is the Corey Toole of 2024. Does he have a gold jersey with his name on it come July this season?
Oh, maybe for Paris. Maybe for Paris. I reckon Johnny Menenti will be licking his lips waiting to take Corey Toole and Darby Lancaster back. But we mentioned it for the 7 skill set. How good was it seeing Darby Lancaster take contact, go to ground, regather, and score again? Like, his short kicking game is great. That was an excellent deft piece of skill and just pace. There is no substitute for pace, and he had it in spades. Jacob Radomanovuki-Nipkins is one of the quickest players in New Zealand Super Rugby at the moment, and Lancaster made him look like a slouch. This kid is seriously quick.
He really is, it's just a time and time again we're talking about it. But the pathway that is the Rugby Sevens program at the moment is setting our 15s player up for success. We've spoke about Corey Toole last year. Everyone's raving about him. Darby Lancaster burst onto the season this year. In our preview earlier in the year, I was sort of wondering, will we even see him play any minutes for the Melbourne Rebels this season? He went and played the Perth Sevens. Surely John Menenti wanted to keep him in the program. And luckily, he came back. He has been with the Rebels for the rest of the season. He gets his debut, what, 3 or so weeks ago? And he's starting to have impact on the game. No chance is anyone getting that number, I think he's 11, jersey off him at this point. Just incredible. Everything he does at the moment, he's making the right decisions. He's popping up in the, like, not only is he scoring great, exciting tries out wide, but he's finishing them off in the middle of the field, getting intercepts at the 80th minute. Just incredible.
He carved up, but, you know, wingers don't score these tries without it being set up through the middle, right? So, once again, Rebels pack standing up and putting in a really good shift. The usual suspects. Josh Kemeny has been really strong this season and again stood up. Luke Ansaldo-Kailoto was tough again, but the man who made it happen it was the halves pairing. Ryan Lawrence and Carter Gordon both had really good individual games. A couple of try assists for Ryan Lawrence. Carter Gordon gets 2 tries, 5 tackle busts. Really happy to take the ball into contact as well. Like, we saw that last year that he's quite a physical 10 in attack, but he carried 20 times. Like, more often than not, he was the pressure relieving carry that you expect from a midfielder to, you know, get the ball over the advantage line and let it loose. We're seeing great things in attack from Carter Gordon, but I got to ask, and you would have seen this too, what's going on with the goal kicking? What's happening? He's got just a putt out there when he's going off the tee.
Just get someone else to do it. Like, he's playing so well. Every other facet of his game, he's just absolutely smoking it. I was about to say kicking goals, but he's not actually doing that, so I won't go there. But someone else needs to take that pressure off him. He has so much on his shoulders at the moment. If they can get a winger kicking goals, if they can get a center, surely Ryan Lawrence could throw them over. Look at the biceps on him. Someone else needs to step up for the Rebels and take over, because Carter Gordon is doing so much elsewhere in the field that the misses at goal surely are eating away at his sort of his mental stamina in the game.
Because they're not direction either. They're just pure and simple miss hits. That's twice in 2 weeks now that he's absolutely bottled it from really close near range. It is unacceptable. I know we've got good goal kickers like the likes of Lolasio have been kicking really well. Benny Donaldson's been hitting them fairly well over at the Force. But yeah, like if we're going to have Carter Gordon in the starting goal jersey, he needs to be kicking 80%, and we currently can't rely on him to do that. So that's going to be a huge thing going forward for his season. Quick standout actually for the referee. I can't remember who refereed this game, but I was thrilled to see, was it Brendan Williams? Or Paul Williams from over the ditch?
It was a Kiwi, but I don't actually have who it was.
That's all good. I was thrilled to see him pull up Falau Fakatava for trying to milk penalties. So we see all the time in Super Rugby, cheeky halfbacks passing into people just to get a penalty or pretending to get knocked over by someone. Falau Fakatava tried to earn himself an Oscar from a quick tap, you know, running straight into a nearby Rebels player and throwing himself to the floor. And you just hear from the ref, don't fall over. And we don't see it enough. Like it's the same as cleaning up the caterpillar rucks and time wasting and stuff. I really love seeing referees. They're not stamping their authority. They're not taking over. They're actually keeping the game flowing by stopping penalties being milked that way. And I would love to see that being consistent. We also saw this referee allow quick taps from as close to the mark as you can reasonably expect. It didn't have to be exactly on, but he was allowing quick taps from around, a bit like sevens, which I love to see as well, because it's increasing the pace of the game and preventing those stoppages rather. And I love seeing that. I'm sure we all want a faster, more flowing product, and referees who make those kinds of decisions get a huge tick in my book.
100%. I agree completely. Let's keep moving now and look at our preview for round 9 of Super Rugby Pacific. Now, this week is another bye week. So there are 4 games this week. We have the Waratahs, the Rebels, the Force. No, who else is missing? Waratahs, Rebels. Who am I missing on this table?
Moana and Chiefs.
Chiefs. Oh, my fantasy side is going to suck this week. Anyway, they all have the bye. So we've got four games. Let's lead into it. We have up first. That says H. Oh, I thought that said HBF Park, which is where the Western Force play. But no, it's HFC Bank Stadium in Fiji. Fiji and Indrua are hosting the Hurricanes on Friday night, 5:05 kickoff, Sydney and Queensland time. Now, Hurricanes, this is a really interesting game. Hurricanes are 7-7, but the Fiji Drua are a different beast at home. Is this the first loss for the Hurricanes coming up?
Yep, it's first loss. I want it to be, and I think it will be as well, so it's doubly exciting. Fiji at home, different beast, right? Like, we all know that they're 15 points better on home deck, and I think it's the first game that they're playing in Suva this year as well. They've played the past home games at La Toka, so you're going to have a revitalized crowd, new people coming in to see their heroes in Fiji, and I think they'd be really disappointed with that performance that they dished up in Melbourne. So obviously a couple of players missing out, Korodrodrua and Lamani, both out, but they have picked up former Reds and Rebels halfback Mosa Rovi, who's also played a couple of tests for Fiji. He's come across as cover in halfback. So they've got a few quality players coming into the halves. And we know how good the Hurricanes have been this year. We know the strength of their pack. But Fiji at home is the ultimate away trip, right? And I think it'll be a nail biter. It's going to be Drua by 2 or 3.
Yeah, I really think this one will go down to the wire. I think that the Hurricanes probably have shown enough this year to edge it, even with a 14-plus Drua at home. So I'd say the Hurricanes by 2 points in this one. But it only comes in the last minute or so. It really does.
Kimi Valentini, another drop goal from the big fella.
Oh, that would be incredible. That would be, I'm just hoping for a dry deck, right? Friday. This is the game after the Fijiana team hosting the Western Force women as well in the Super Rugby Women's semi-final. So make sure you're tuning into that one as well. Next game on Friday night is your boys, Queensland Reds hosting the Highlanders. 7:35 kickoff at Suncorp Stadium. We saw the Highlanders get done last week by the Rebels. Can the Reds bounce back from a horror week last week against Moana to beat the Highlanders at home?
Well, they've got to, right? If the Reds are going to be taken seriously this year and not scrape into finals like they have the past two iterations of Super Rugby Pacific, they need to win their home games. They didn't do it last year. They got dusted by the Blues at home. They got dusted by the Brumbies at home. They got dusted by another Kiwi team at Suncorp. I'm pretty sure it was the Crusaders. So they need to bank these home games. And the Highlanders, on paper, are the weakest of the New Zealand teams. So they've got to do it. I believe that they will on Friday night. I'm going to be there, super excited. It's the first game I'm going to get to all year. And I think they're going to have to get there. They'll do it without Tate and Fraser, probably, with Judiciary.
No, they will. Great opportunity. Will, definitely will.
Well, they're going to have to. They're not going to be there. So a big opportunity for players like Kalani Thomas. Potentially a young seven comes into the mix like a Joe Bryle or a John Bryant to see if they can match up to the Highlanders back row. And I reckon it's going to be high scoring.
Round 9.
Not for a little while. Les said he wasn't going to be ready for at least a couple of weeks, and he mentioned that before the Moana game. So Jimmy O'Connor, we're still waiting on him. But I'd expect to see like Tommy Liner back in the mix for this one. It's a huge test for Queensland. I reckon they'll do it by 10, and it's going to be stacks of tries. What's your tip?
The Reds need to come away with this with a bonus point win like the Rebels did this last week. Whether they can do that or not 100% sure. They just have, I mean, I sent you a message at halftime of the Reds game on Friday. I said, are the Reds still at the bye week? Yeah. They have not woken up. They did not come out of that bye week the same way they went into it. Maybe they kind of did off that loss to the Force. But anyway, they don't look like the team they started the competition this year. If they can get back to that, if they can reset and get back to the form that they opened against the Waratahs, they could beat anyone in this competition. So I want to see the Reds put in a big performance against the Highlanders and just extend that that victory. I saw a stat this week that the Rebels win against the Highlanders was the... I don't remember the exact number, say the 12th or 13th Australian victory over a Kiwi team in 2024. And that was the same result all up we got in 2023. So by round eight, we've already broken it. The record. So
yeah, we're smashing
we,
on that
we
front.
Need to extend every opportunity now. We need to extend the victory so that we get that Bledisloe back at the end of Super Rugby Pacific. That's how it works, right?
It is. That's how the Bledisloe has always worked, and we've just been robbed because we haven't been focusing on Super Rugby. But another Trans-Tasman game where I'm super psyched for and pretty confident for no other reason than blind hope is Blues v Brumbies at Eden Park. So Saturday evening, 5:05 PM over at the Garden. You've got a top four battle. I think it's 2-3 in this one. Both teams coming off the bye, if I'm correct. And yep. I think this is one of the great rivalries that started blossoming ever since that that semi-final a few years ago, the Lolisio charge down by Tuonga Fasi. They've had this great rivalry that's built, a couple of great games at Super Round previously. This could go either way. And if the Brumbies do get up, then I've got to take my hat off and say, why did we ever doubt them heading into this year? Because at the moment, they're 6-1.
This is the line in the sand. If they win this game against the Blues at Eden Park, they're well and truly title contenders in 2024. We've spoken about it in the lead up to this game, in this round. The fans aren't necessarily confident in how they've gone. They've won games, they've lost games they shouldn't have. They've put in mixed performances so far, but they're still 1-1. What is it? They've lost
six and one.
So this is the litmus test, right? If they can show up and beat the Blues at Eden Park, then we all need to start looking at these Brumbies a little bit differently than we have so far. It's going to be an incredible performance. Really looking forward to seeing this game. My heart says Brumbies, my head says Blues. But again, like that Drua game, I think there's going to be minuscule points in this, 2, 3, 4 points either side. I can't split them at the moment. I don't know.
I'm finding myself in the position where it's no longer hope for the Brumbies. Like, I hope for Australian teams to beat the Kiwis, but now the Brumbies, I expect them. I expect them to do that. I almost have a different set of standards for the lads out of Canberra. And I expect them to win now. The Blues have been a brilliant attacking team this season. They have been for the past 3 or 4. But if you put them under pressure and you turn the screws, they crack. Like, we've seen that in the big games. They haven't won their semifinals. They haven't won their finals. They don't do big games. I think this is a big game. And I think that the Brumbies are going to go over and put in the kind of performance that says, we're finishing top two. We're not going to get trapped into that, you know, traveling for a semi anymore. We're going to book that in at Canberra and welcome someone for a really big dance down at GIO. So I'm going to call Brumbies by 4. And I'm crossing fingers and toes again before the big game of the weekend, Mitch. It's spoon battle time.
Saturday night, 7:35. This is the game of the round. This is on Gem as well as Stan Sports. So it's the free-to-air game. Western Force hosting the Crusaders. Now, who would have thought at round 9 of the competition, the Crusaders are in the playoff for the Wooden Spoon? But it is what it is. It is 2024. Can the Western Force do that? There has been some interesting signings come out from the Western Force in the past 2 weeks. Former Wallaby, former Waratah, Curtly Bill has made his way west. But also, former Queensland Reds hooker Brandon Panger-Amosa is back in Australia and playing for the Western Force a lot earlier than we were initially anticipating. Do we see either of those guys feature in the 23 this week? Does that help the Force get to the victory over the Crusaders?
Gee, I'd like them to. I think it'd be great to have a couple of additional Wallabies pop into the team. And the hype around this will be so good as well. So many Kiwis in Perth. And having the Crusaders come into town along the Force and they're in the same level pegging, I think it's going to be a terrific matchup. So, I'd throw Curtly, I'd throw Panger-Amosa in. I think they've got a few more signings up their sleeves as well. The Force, between you, me, and all the listeners, might have accidentally dropped someone over their socials and then pulled the post for someone that they've signed from the UK. No, you have to go find a screenshot. But they do have more signings to come along. So, yeah, big movements from Cronny. I would love to see the Force get up for this. We know how tough it was to travel to Perth last year. They almost went undefeated. I think it was just that last game against the Chiefs that they dropped out of all their home games. And this Crusaders side, I mean, they had some good moments against the Tars and it should have been theirs, but there's not that clinical finishing ability. And
there's no aura around this team, is there?
It's starting to break, and you know, now we've jinxed it and they'll, you know, qualify eighth and win the whole thing. But the Force, I think the Force are almost favourites here because that's such a crushing defeat against the Tars to lose it that late and then have to kick on to the other side of the continent and play a Force team that is desperate. Desperate to avenge what was a bang ordinary game before their bye. 50 points to 3 against the Blues. The Force have so much to prove in front of their home crowd.
Yeah, I think the Force have enough to do it. I'm looking forward to, hopefully we get to see Kirtley Beal back in Super Rugby Pacific. In the blue would be fantastic to see him get some minutes. I think Brandon Pangramosa probably is pushing it in terms of his arrival at, in Perth to make the 23. But if he gets included, again, that's great. So I'd love to see the Force get up here. I think they have the talent to do it. 5 points, I'll say. Western Force win by 5. How cool would that be?
Oh, it'd be so good. Golden Point. I reckon we're going to Golden Point again. I've enjoyed seeing them. I know we had that debate and Morgs on Stand commentary has been critical of Golden Point, but it's added a lot to the competition so far this year. And I reckon we could be destined for another Golden Point at HBF. You heard it here first.
Far out. That would be insane for the Crusaders to go to that. It's 2 weeks in a row. Anyway, let's leave things there. This is a longer podcast than normal. We've had so much rugby to chat through. Wrapped up the Super Rugby Women's season of 2024. Previewed the finals. Looked at Super Rugby Pacific Round 8 and Round 9. Make sure if you are in Sydney, make sure you get out to support the Waratahs in their semi-final against the Brumbies on Friday night. If you are in Fiji, get down early and watch the Fijiana Indrua host the Western Force women. Some awesome games, and get down to Ballymore next week, regardless if you are just a fan of rugby, to support the winner of Super W this year. Lockie, we'll leave it there. Thanks for joining me this week. Thanks, M Chance, for her time tonight as well. We'll be back in your ears same time next week. We'll see you then. Bye.